This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Stolen Songbird, written by Danielle L. Jensen, performed by Aaron Moon and Eric Michael Summerer.
Chapter 1. Cecile. My voice rose an octave, resonating through the goshawk's hollow marketplace, drowning out the bleating sheep and the hammer of the blacksmith down the way. Dozens of familiar faces abandoned their business, expressions uniform in their nervousness, as they anticipated the note I had dreaded daily for the past month. She liked an audience for my failures. A tremor raced through my body, my palms slicking with sweat. Madame Delcourt's gaze burned between my shoulder blades, her low expectations only fueling my resolve. I would not break. Resisting the urge to ball my hands into fists, I pushed my last breath into the crescendo of the piece. Almost there. Several people stepped forward, the words of encouragement on their lips, drowned by the enormity of my song. This was when my voice broke. Always. Always. But not today. The market erupted with cheers as I finished. "Well done, Cecile," someone shouted, and I bobbed a little curtsy, my cheeks flushed with a sweet combination of embarrassment and delight. The echo of my song drifted off through fields and valleys tinted green with spring, and everyone went back to their business. "Don't go getting all puffed up in the head." Madame Delcourt sniffed from behind me. "Impressing that lot of backwards country folk is no great feat." My back stiffened, and I turned to meet her wrinkled glare. "You're good," she said, lips drawn tight to the point of invisibility. "But not as good as her." Her. My mother. For most of my childhood, I knew almost nothing of her. The woman my father spoke of with such reverence that one would have thought her a queen. Knew only that my father had run off to Trianon in his youth, fallen in love, and married a young stage soprano named Genevieve. But when my grandfather died and my father inherited the farm, she'd refused to return with him. "City girl who couldn't stomach the thought of country living," Gran always grumbled when asked about my mother. "Though what kind of woman abandons her husband and three children is beyond my reckoning." Abandoned was a strong word. She did visit, occasionally. I thought for a long time she'd neglected us because she didn't love us enough. But now I understood the decision my mother had made. A farmer's wife had no respite from work, up at dawn and last to bed, tending animals, making meals, churning butter, doing laundry, cleaning house, raising children. The list was endless. The wives in Goshawk's Hollow all looked old before their time, with chapped hands, weathered faces, and permanent frowns, whereas my mother remained beautiful, a star of the stage. She looked more like my older sister than my mother. "Are we finished for today, or would you like for me to sing it again, madame?" My voice was saccharine, and contrasted mightily, I knew, with my flinty expression. She'd been a thorn in my backside for nigh on 4 years now, doing her best to turn what I loved most into a dreaded chore. She'd failed. "By this time next week, you'll be begging to come home." Turning on her heel, she strode off the porch and back into the inn, black skirts swishing. With any luck, this time this week would be the last time I laid eyes on my vocal teacher. In a week's time, I would be learning from the best opera singer living on the Isle of Light. Unbidden, my mother's image rose to the forefront of my mind, and along with it the memory. 4 years ago to the day, when she'd sealed my fate. Sing, she had demanded. And I'd chosen a tune popular at barn dances, the only song I knew. When she scowled, I thought my heart would break from disappointment. Any talentless wretch could manage that, she said, blue irises identical to mine, except that hers were cold as the winter sky. Repeat after me. She sang a few lines from an opera, her voice so lovely that it brought tears to my eyes. Now you. I imitated her, hesitantly at first, but then with more confidence. She'd sung and I'd repeated, trilling like a songbird mimicking a flute. She'd smiled. Well done, Cécile. Well done. Turning to my father, who'd watched from the corner, she'd said, I'll take her when she's 17. When he'd started to argue, she raised a hand, silencing him. She's strong, clever, and once she's grown out of this awkward stage, she'll be fair enough, and her voice is divine. Her eyes had gleamed. She's wasted out here in the country, where no one would know talent if it kicked them in the face. I'll arrange for tutors to come out to Goshawk's Hollow to teach her. I'll not have her arriving with the manners of a milk cow. Turning to me, she'd unclasped a golden pendant from her neck and fastened it around mine. Beauty can be created. Knowledge learned. But talent can neither be purchased nor taught. And you've talent, my dearest girl. When you stand on stage and sing, the whole world will love you. I clutched that pendant in my fist now, staring at the door Madame had closed behind her. The whole world would love me. The sound of my name caught my attention. Scampering down the wooden steps, I dodged puddles as I made my way over to where my best friend Sabine was leaning against a fence post, playing with a coiled lock of hair. She grinned and handed me a basket of eggs. You finished it. 100th time's the charm. Taking hold of her arm, I tugged her in the direction of the stables. I need to hurry back to the farm. Gran needs these eggs for the cake she's baking for my going-away party tonight. Sabine's face fell. I did invite you, I reminded her. You can come back with me if you'd like, spend the night. The coach will have to pass through town on the way to Trianon, so it would be easy enough to drop you back in the morning, I said casually, as though I traveled by hired coach every day of my life. I know, she looked down. But my ma took the gig to the Reynard farm and said not to expect her till the morning. I made a face, not bothering to suggest she saddle her pony and ride with me. Sabine was terrified of horses. Bloody stones and sky, why hadn't I thought ahead this morning and hitched Fleur to the buggy instead of riding to town? And where on God's green earth was my brother? Frédéric was supposed to have arrived from Trianon hours ago. Sabine might have conceded to ride behind him, if only because she'd fancied him since time eternal. I can't help but think this is the last time we'll see each other, Sabine said softly, interrupting my thoughts. That once you're in Trianon with your mother performing and going to all those parties, you'll forget about the Hollow. And me. That's utter foolishness, I declared. I'll be back so often to visit, you'll be right sick of me. You know Frédéric comes back whenever he has leave. He hasn't been back since the new year. It was true that since Fred's most recent promotion to second lieutenant, he'd found less opportunity to visit. Then I'll ride by myself. Oh, Cécile, Sabine shook her head. You can't be doing that anymore. It's unladylike. People will talk. But it's in your best interest, I reminded her. The stable boy was leading Fleur towards us, but I found myself not wanting to leave. Sabine and I had been best friends our whole lives, and the thought of not seeing her every day formed a cold pit in my stomach. I'll ride home, give Gran the eggs, and then hitch up the buggy and come back for you, I decided. Go put on your blue dress. I'll be back in no time at all. She bit the ends of her hair. I don't know. I caught her gaze for a long moment. You're going to come back with me in the buggy and attend my party, I said firmly. Sabine's eyes went blank, and for a heartbeat, everything came into sharp focus for me. The sounds of the market, the solid earth beneath my feet. A breeze rushed past us, ruffling Sabine's hair. She smiled. Of course. I wouldn't miss it for anything. Nothing a bit of willpower couldn't accomplish. Swinging into the saddle, I twitched the reins to calm my frisky horse. I won't be more than an hour. Watch for me. One hand clutching the basket of eggs and the other the reins, I dug in my heels and galloped out of town. Our farm was close enough to the hollow that we were almost considered town folk, but far enough that the smell of pigs didn't offend the noses of those less used to country life. I could have galloped the entire way there, but I let Fleur stop and catch her breath about halfway. Her hooves thudded softly against the damp earth as we walked down the road. The smell of pine was thick in the air, and a cool breeze rushed down from the mountains, blowing my long red hair out behind me. A flash of movement caught my eye, and I stopped, scanning the forest to either side of the road. Bears and mountain cats were common enough around here, but if the horse had scented a predator, she'd have been uncontrollable. The wind gusted through the trees, and I thought I heard a crackle of breaking underbrush, though I couldn't be sure. My pulse quickened, a prickle of anxiety running down my spine. Highwayman? Robbery wasn't common this far north of the ocean road, but it was possible. Hello? I called out, gathering up the reins. Is someone there? No answer, but anyone intending to rob me was unlikely to reply. My trepidation grew. I'd ridden this road, rain, snow, and shine, and never felt a moment's fear before. Fleur pranced beneath me, sensing my anxiety. The wind rose again, no longer gentle, but like angry fingers tugging at my hair. The sun ducked behind a cloud, turning the air chill. My eyes unconsciously turned to Forsaken Mountain, looming in the distance. I was halfway between home and the town, but Jérôme Gérard's farm was nearby. I could ride there and ask his son Christophe to accompany me the rest of the way. But what if he laughed at me for being such a ninny, scared of noises in the underbrush that were probably from a squirrel or a snake? Despite a lifetime proving to the contrary, everyone acted like I was already a city girl, and this would only prove their point. I circled and stared back the way I came. I could ride back and wait for my brother. But what if something had kept him in Trianon, and he wasn't even coming? I'll gallop home, I decided. Let whoever's lurking in the woods try and catch me. Turning Fleur around, I abruptly hauled on the reins. The basket slipped from my hand and smashed against the ground, yellow yolks mixing with the mud. A cloaked rider blocked the road. My heart leapt. Fleur wheeled around, and I laid the ends of my reins to her haunches. Ha! I shouted as she surged forward. Cécile! Cécile, wait, it's me! A familiar voice. Gentler this time. I reined in and looked over my shoulder. Luc? Yes, it's me, Cécile. He trotted over to me, pulling back his hood to reveal his face. What are you doing sneaking about like that? I said. You scared the wits out of me. He shrugged. I wasn't certain it was you at first. Sorry about the eggs. An apology that didn't explain at all why he'd been lurking in the bushes in the first place. I haven't seen you in quite some time. Where have you been? I asked the question even though I knew the answer. His father was gameskeeper on an estate not far from our farm, but several months ago, Luc had taken off for Trianon. My brother and other townsfolk had caught wind that Luc had had a bit of luck betting on the horses and playing at cards, and was now living the high life, spending his winnings. Here and there, he said, riding around me in a circle. The gossips say you're moving to Trianon to live with your mother. Her carriage is coming for me tomorrow. You'll be singing then? On stage?
Yes.
He smiled. You always did have the voice of an angel.
I need to get home, I said. My gran's expecting me. My father, too. I hesitated and looked down the road. You may ride with me if you like. I rather hoped he wouldn't accept, but riding was better than standing here alone with him.
Today is your birthday, isn't it?
His horse sidled tight against mine. I frowned. Yes.
17. You're a woman now.
He looked me up and down as though inspecting something that could be bought and sold. A horse at market. Or something worse. He chuckled softly to himself and I cringed. What's so funny? My heart raced. My instincts telling me that something was terribly wrong. Please, someone come down the road.
I was just thinking about how sometimes fortune finds us when we least expect, he said.
Before I could react, he reached down and seized Fleur's reins.
I need you to come with me. There are some individuals who would very much like to make your acquaintance.
I'm not going anywhere with you, Luc, I said, trying to keep my voice steady. I did not want him to know I was afraid. My brother won't take kindly to hearing that you caused me trouble.
Luc glanced around. Funny, but I don't see Frédéric about. Seems it's just you and me.
He was right about that, but wrong if he thought I'd go without a fight. I jammed my spurs into Fleur's sides and she reared, hooves striking out and knocking away Luke's hand.
Ha!
I screamed and plunged down the road at a gallop. Sensing my terror, the horse ran faster than ever before, ears pinned back. But Luke's stallion was bigger. If I kept to the road, he'd catch us easily. A game trail appeared ahead and I swung down the path. Branches tore at my hair and skirts as we leapt over fallen trees and crashed through the underbrush. I let the mare have her head, concentrating on staying low and keeping my seat. Behind us, I heard the big horse's hooves thundering against the ground along with Luke's curses and vile threats. We were nearing the Gerard farm. Ahead, the break in the forest was visible, and beyond lay their fields.
Chris!
I screamed. Knowing I was still too far for them to hear.
Jerome!
A glance behind showed Luc in fast pursuit. He was near enough for me to see the fury written on his face. I could not let him catch me. I would not. Then a branch smashed across my chest, launching me backwards. Fleur disappeared from under me and I was falling. My eyes fixed on the sun filtering through the green leaves of the trees. Then, nothing. Chapter 2. Cécile. A gray furred foreleg was all I could see when I opened my eyes. My body bouncing up and down with the trotting motion of a horse. The pommel of the saddle dug painfully into my stomach, and my head felt like 100 angry giants were trying to hammer their way out. Where was I? I squirmed, but I couldn't move far. My hands and feet were bound to the horse, my mouth gagged.
Luke. Terror surged through me like water through a broken dam, and I thrashed and jerked about, trying my hardest to get free. The stallion shied sideways, and I caught sight of thick forest.
I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Luke's voice was companionable, as though we were out for a ride in the park.
He has the unfortunate habit of going over backwards when he spooks, and that wouldn't go well for you.
I froze.
You're probably wondering where I'm taking you. I'd love to say, but unfortunately my associates have placed a number of restrictions on me.
Tears of frustration ran down my forehead as I painfully craned my neck to look up at him. He smirked and patted me on the bottom.
You didn't really want to go to Trianon anyway, did you? The stage girls are all just highly priced harlots, and you never struck me as that sort of girl. Better suited to the Hollow than the big city.
My head dropped, and I rested my cheek against the horse's shoulder. Bile rose in my throat, and I struggled to keep my stomach contents down. If I threw up while gagged, I'd choke on my own vomit.
Think, Cecile. Think. Here we are.
He dismounted, and I stared at his hands as he untied the knot binding me to the horse. When the tension on my legs gave, I kicked out hard, catching him in the face.
Damn you!
He howled. I slid to the ground, landing with a thud. Seconds later, a boot caught me in the ribs, flipping me over. I yelped against the gag, my gaze fixed on Luke's bloody face. My wrists and ankles were still bound. The best I could do was roll into a seated position.
You can make this easy, or you can make it hard, he hissed, wiping his nose with a filthy handkerchief. Either way, you're coming with me.
Where? I managed to make the word audible around my gag. He jerked a blood-smeared chin forwards, and I looked over my shoulder. Forsaken Mountain loomed menacingly above us. Its glittering southern slope was sheer as a knife slice through butter. The broken half, a crumbled slide of rock stretching down to the ocean. I felt my eyes widen. Old men always talked about treasure troves of gold lying beneath the fallen rock. But they also said the mountain was cursed. Treasure hunters had a way of disappearing when they went poking in amongst the rocks, and for every story concerning a man gone missing, 10 more speculated on those who'd taken him. Luke left me gaping at the mountain while he led the horse over to a rough wooden paddock. I clawed at the knots binding my ankles, but they were tight, and my fingers were numb. Luke was unsaddling the animal now, distracted. I tried to crawl on knees and elbows, but quickly realized it was a waste of time. I couldn't move fast enough, and my legs left obvious marks in the dirt. Crouched on my knees, I reached up and pulled off my gag. Taking a deep breath, I screamed, my voice thundering down the mountainside. The horse squealed and leapt away from Luke, galloping to the far side of the enclosure. I screamed again, praying there would be someone near enough to hear. Luke sprinted in my direction, but I managed to howl for help one last time before his fist caught me in the cheek. I toppled backwards, and he grabbed my dress, hauling me upright and hitting me again. My face throbbed, my vision hazy.
Quite a set of lungs on you.
I tried to crawl away, but he snatched up the rope binding my legs and dragged me down a slope, my skirts riding up around my waist. Sitting on my bare legs, he unbound my ankles and retied the rope to one of them. Then he flipped me over and untied my wrists, leaving them free.
You need to be able to swim. It's the only way under the mountain.
One hand grasping the bodice of my dress, he tore it down the front, brushing aside my arms as I attempted to fight him off.
Don't worry, Cecile. They were specific that your virtue remain uncompromised.
Who? I demanded.
Who are you talking about? Where are you taking me? Why are you doing this?
He shook his head. You'll learn soon enough.
Taking hold of the rope attached to my ankle, he hauled me into the icy pool of water lying at the base of the rocks. I had to start swimming or risk drowning. My breath came in great heaving sobs, my terror building to the point I thought I might drown myself and save Luke the trouble. He must have noticed as much because he swam back and snatched hold of my arm.
Pull yourself together, Cecile. I didn't drag you all the way up here so you could cry yourself to death. Now, on the other side of this rock is a cave. To get inside, you must swim down about 4 paces and slip under the edge of the rock. Do you think you can manage?
This is madness, I croaked.
Luke dove beneath the surface. I barely had the opportunity to take a deep breath before the rope binding my ankle jerked me under. The rock was slimy under my hand and seemingly endless. I swam hard, the rope slack enough now that I could kick. Where Luke was, I couldn't say. What I did know was that his grip would keep me down here until I found the opening or until I ran out of air. Bubbles trailed from my lips, floating freely to the surface. My lungs burned, desperate for breath. My heart hammered faster and faster. The pressure of the water overhead built until my ears popped. Then the rock disappeared, leaving me disoriented and grasping about in the darkness. I found the edge of the rock, but as I slipped underneath, the water thickened like glue for a moment, holding me in place for precious seconds. My skin tingled as though I stood on the top of a mountain in the middle of a thunderstorm, lightning crackling down all around. Shuddering, I struggled through and pressed upwards. The rope pulled hard on my ankle, flipping me upside down. Hands grabbed hold of my wrists and my head broke the surface. I sucked in sweet, life-giving air. The darkness was absolute. Grasping about, I found a rock protruding from the water, and I clung to its slick edges, afraid to let go. I felt the icy cold of the water on my body and the rough stone beneath my fingers, smelled the stagnant, damp air, and heard the faint splashing of Luke as he paddled towards me. All my other senses combined seemed insignificant compared to the loss of sight. I shivered, waiting.
Are you all right?
Luke's voice broke the silence.
No.
Tension radiated between us, and I cursed every decision I'd made that had led to this point. If only I'd galloped straight home, or fought harder, or had bloody well watched where I was riding, then maybe I wouldn't be here. But I was here, and a morbidly curious little part of me wanted to know why.
You owe me an explanation, I said.
I reckon I do, he said. But first, let's have some light.
I listened as he scrambled out of the water, fumbling around in the darkness. Then the sound of a flint being struck and the faint glow of flame. As welcome to me in that moment as a hand plucking a drowning sailor from stormy waters. Carefully, I climbed out of the pond and made my way towards it. Luke held a burning splinter to a storm lantern. When the wick caught, he turned it up high, illuminating the cavern with its blessed glow. We were in a small cave of sorts, rock encasing us on all sides. Apart from the watery entrance we had come through, the only exit was a dark tunnel leading away from the water. There were no signs of treasure, gold, or of anything other than a pile of supplies and the lantern, which Luke had obviously brought on a prior occasion.
Well,
I said, wrapping my arms around my icy body. All I had on was a shift and boots, and the damp fabric concealed uncomfortably little. I hadn't truly expected him to answer, but Luke had always been excessively proud of himself, so I shouldn't have been surprised when he did.
Of course, of course.
He leaned closer to me, the lamp casting shadows on his face.
It is the most incredible of things. I'd scarce believe it if I hadn't seen it myself.
Get to the point, Luke. He laughed as though something I'd said was beyond amusing.
You never did appreciate a good tale, so fine, I'll get straight to the point. I've found the lost city of Trollis.
Silence hung between us for a long moment. I certainly hadn't expected his motivations to have anything to do with a mythological city. Do you think this is some sort of jest, or have you lost your mind? Mind, 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 mind. We both flinched and looked about uneasily.
The city wasn't lost, Luke. Trollis was buried by half a mountain worth of rock.
Aye, he said, his eyes narrowing.
Buried, but not destroyed, at least not completely.
Impossible. Nothing in this world is strong enough to withstand the weight.
That is the best part, he leaned closer to me. Just like in the stories, they've been living here under the mountain this entire time.
Who? I asked, afraid but desperately wanting to know. Luke's eyes reflected the orange glow of the flame, and he licked his lips, relishing the moment.
The trolls, Cecile. They're here.
Fairy tales, I whispered. Stories told to scare naughty children. Luke laughed.
Oh, they're plenty real and plenty monstrous, and happy enough for us humans to think they're shadows in the night. Keeps people from troubling them and trying to steal their treasure.
Treasure?
Aye, chambers heaped with gold and jewels.
If they dislike humans, why would they let you anywhere near their wealth? I asked, discreetly taking stock of my surroundings. The pool lay directly behind me. If I caught Luke off guard and managed to get into the water, I might have a chance. I could hide in the trees until nightfall and then make my way to the farm, if my father didn't find me first.
His Majesty showed me during our negotiations.
His Majesty? With a maniacal laugh, I leaned back on the palms of my hands. The stone floor was sloped. If I threw my weight backwards, I'd roll into the water. I didn't realize trolls had royalty.
Oh, yes, he said. They are the ones who purchased you.
I gasped. For what?
With gold, he said, mistaking my question.
What do they want with me? I whispered.
Luke shrugged. With what they agreed to pay, they can throw you in a cooking pot for all I care.
Because according to the fairy tales, that was what trolls did. Put you alive into a pot of boiling water, and then gnawed your flesh until all that was left were bleached white bones. I clawed my way back towards the pool, my fingernails tearing on the rocks. All I could think about was that I was being marched towards the most horrific of deaths. Nothing Luke could do to me could possibly be worse than being eaten. I struggled with single-minded purpose towards the pool, but Luke had a tight grip on my leash, and I was no match for his strength.
Help!
My voice echoed off the water and the rock until it seemed I had a dozen doppelgangers, all of them taunting me with the futility of my screams. Luke slapped me hard.
Shut your mouth, or I'll gag you again.
One finger pointing towards the glowing lantern, he said,
Pick that up and start walking.
Hands numb with a cold that was far more than skin deep. I followed Luke's order. What I had thought would be a straight walk into the deep was anything but. Instead, a labyrinth of tunnels, crevices, and dead ends lay beneath the mountain of stone. The floor was an uneven carpet of boulders and rocks, riddled with cracks that could break your ankle or swallow you whole.
I took each step with caution, a kidnapper at my back and the risk of a broken neck at every turn. My shift clung to my body, refusing to dry in the damp darkness, and providing nothing in the way of warmth. The light from the storm lantern shivered along with me, casting strange shadows on the rock and setting my heart racing until I was convinced it would beat itself out of my chest. At each intersection, countless rough markers were carved or chalked on the stone. Some were clearly directions or warnings, but others were meaningless symbols. Logic crept past my fear, and I knew that if I had any chance of escaping, I'd need to know how to find my way. "Who made these?" I asked, my voice seeming loud after the long silence. I kept my tone quiet and non-confrontational. Luke got his back up easily at the best of times, and I needed to keep him talking. "Treasure hunters." Luke tapped his knife against one of the strange symbols. "Each of the pathfinders has his own mark, leading the way he deems fastest. Or safest, most like," he amended. An arrow next to a symbol carved into the stone pointed to the right, where a narrow, slot-like tunnel promised a tight squeeze, even for me. Half a dozen symbols had arrows pointing to the passage on the left, which seemed wide open and inviting by comparison. "Why not the other way?" Luke shook his head and tapped two wavy lines, scratched below the markings. "Means Slua been sighted down that path. Or their leavings, at least."
"What's a Slua?"
The uneasy expression on Luke's face did not ease my fear.
"Something big and something best to be avoided," he said. "I asked the trolls about them. They said that if I ever got close enough to spot one, 'twould be unlikely I'd live to tell the tale. Even they are afraid of Slua."
He pointed towards the right.
"The tight spaces are safer."
I shone the light down the left passageway, but the scant few feet of visibility gave me no comfort that there weren't Slua or worse lurking beyond. My back against the wall, I reluctantly squeezed into the crack. The crevice remained tight for a long time, and progress was both slow and exhausting. When the passage finally opened up into a bigger space, I sank down on the damp rock with relief. Luke emerged soon after, his face as filthy and exhausted as I assumed mine to be.
"We need to keep moving," he said, after taking a long swallow from his water skin, then passing it to me. "The trolls are expecting us by nightfall."
Needless to say, I didn't find the reminder particularly motivating. "Who told you about these tunnels, anyway? Or would you have me believe you decided to crawl to the center of the earth one day to discover if you might pop out the other side?" Luke sneered at me.
"No one can tell anyone about this place. The trolls ensure that. If you make it all the way to Trollus, and if they decide you're useful enough not to kill on the spot, they make you swear magic oaths binding you to secrecy. That's why I couldn't tell you anything until we got under the rocks. The trolls, they're big on oaths. Don't take too kindly to those who break their word, so we best be moving right along."
I sat, rooted, refusing to move. Luke tossed up his hands in exasperation.
"Fine. I took to noticing that old Henri seemed to have unlimited coin to do his drinking in town, though he ain't never worked an honest day in his life. So I followed him, thinking he had a stash buried in the forest somewhere. Turns out, he's been trading with the trolls all these years and no one the wiser."
"Trading what?"
"Books, of all things."
"And you? What did you give them?" Luke shrugged.
"Odds and sods. They pay a lot, but it's a dangerous trip. When I heard they were looking for a girl with your description, I knew I'd hit pay dirt, and I was right. They let me name my price.
Fury overtook my fear of punishment. He had sold me. Sold my life away, all because he was too greedy to do honest work. Booted heels lashing out, I caught him in the knees and watched as he toppled over the edge of the rock and out of sight. Unfortunately, his grip on the rope did not slacken, and I was dragged forward until my feet dangled over the edge.
You just don't give up, do you?
Luke sat about 4 feet below me in a pool of guck, and a rank stench rose up to assault my nostrils. He wasn't alone.
Looks like you have a friend,
I snapped, pointing at the skeleton lying on the floor next to Luke.
Shame you didn't meet a similar fate.
Luke looked down and grimaced. Then his curiosity got the better of him, and he gave the body a closer examination.
Shine the lantern down this way, Cecile. I can't believe I've never noticed him before.
I obliged, but only because I had no other options. He'd just pull me over the edge if I didn't obey. Judging from the barrenness of the bones, the man had been dead for some time. My skin broke out into a fresh set of goosebumps.
What is that slime?
I don't know. Never seen it before.
He sounded nervous, and his trepidation caught hold of me like a plague.
How many times have you been this way?
I asked, my mind turning to the real fear that we might be lost, and he just didn't know it. There was no chance to respond before the cavern thundered with a strange, roaring noise.
Boom!
The echoes faded, replaced by the wet swish of something slithering in our direction. Something large. Luke's terrified eyes met mine, and he whispered,
"Run!"
Chapter 3 Cecile. Terror may have given us wings, but the labyrinth of Forsaken Mountain kept us to a crawl. We wriggled across boulders, boots slipping on the loose rock and ears peeled for the telltale swish, swish of the slua hunting at our heels. If it was fast enough to catch us, it was choosing not to. But whenever I thought we'd escaped, we'd round a corner, and the swish, swish of slithering would accost our ears, forcing us to backtrack or take another way, almost as though it was toying with us. If not for the etched directions, we'd have certainly lost our way. Exhaustion was catching up with us, and when it did, so would the slua. Luke examined the markers, both of us panting and gasping for breath. We stood at the convergence of 3 tunnels.
This way, he whispered. Just a bit further, and we'll come to a narrow hole. You'll have to get down and crawl, but once you're through, we'll be into Trollis. The slua won't be able to follow.
Boom!
I started in the direction he pointed, but Luke shoved me aside and went first. Reaching the tight bit, he fell to his stomach and squirmed his way in. His small pack caught on the edge, forcing him to back up, take it off, and shove it ahead of him.
Swish, 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 boom!
Triumph thundered in the creature's voice as it drew closer.
Hurry, hurry, hurry,
I whispered, and turned to look back the way we'd come.
Swish, swish, swish.
Only Luke's feet stuck out of the tunnel now. I dropped to my knees, ready to dive in the second he made room.
Swish, swish, swish.
Luke's heels disappeared. I glanced behind me one last time, the light of the lantern catching the monster rounding the corner. The slua reared, white and glistening like a giant slug, and out of its mouth shot a long whip-like tongue. The lantern smashed at my feet, guttering out. I screamed and scrambled into the hole. I could see nothing, only hear Luke cursing ahead of me and the swish of the slua coming up from behind. I crawled faster, uncertain how far into the tunnel I had progressed or if my ankles still protruded enough for the monster to catch hold.
Boom!
I screamed, and something smacked into the heel of my boot, the force driving me into the back of Luke's legs. Hurry! It's coming!
Boom!
We clawed our way forward, and the tunnel shuddered as the creature slammed into the rock. I shrieked, snot and tears coating my face as I shoved against Luke's feet, trying to get through the tight hole. Even after he reached the other side and pulled me out of the tunnel, it took a long time for my panic to recede enough for me to think. I was not safe. Not only was I kidnapped, my kidnapper was too stupid to get us safely to those he intended to sell me to. It was all for nothing. I was going to die for nothing. I hate you, I croaked. I swallowed hard and repeated myself, I hate you. The sentiment still wasn't enough, so I howled the words, I hate you, Luke. Where's the lamp? His voice held no emotion, but I felt him pick up the end of the rope still attached to my ankle. At the end of the tunnel with the slua, feel free to go get it. Except the thought of the creature wolfing him down didn't make me feel much better. I would be alone in the dark with no sense of time or direction. The chances of finding my way out were non-existent. I'd starve to death down here, and no one would ever suspect what had happened. Luke groaned.
Idiot! Now what are we supposed to do?
I listened to the sound of him fumbling in his pack and looked around. If such a thing is possible in complete darkness. Or perhaps not so complete after all. In the distance, a silvery glow beckoned that could only be one thing. Moonlight. And moonlight meant escape. Drop the rope, I whispered, my prayers somehow finding their way into my voice, hope giving them power that fear had not.
What?
I said, drop the rope. Water dripped. Luke's breathing grew still and even. A draft chilled my skin and the rope around my ankle grew slack. But before I got the chance to run, the light was upon us. Someone else was in the tunnel.
What the?
Luke started to say, and then with a grunt, he tackled me from behind.
Help!
I gasped, but I couldn't draw breath beneath his bulk. Squeezing an elbow underneath me, I pushed up, gasping in a mouthful of air and screamed. Luke's fist connected with the back of my head, driving my face into the rocky floor. But my voice echoed through the tunnel.
Help! Help! Help!
I tried to turn over to fight, but Luke pummeled my skull, sending a wave of dizziness through me. Light flashed in my eyes, and abruptly, his weight disappeared. With a muffled oof and a groan of pain, Luke fell to the ground next to me. Every inch of me ached, but I didn't think anything was broken. I could still run.
I don't believe this was part of the arrangement, Monsieur Luke.
Rising to my knees, I gazed up at the man standing in front of us, his figure outlined by moonlight.
Help me,
I pleaded, tugging on the silken fabric of his cloak.
Please help me. He's kidnapped me from my family and intends to sell me to the trolls.
Is that so?
His voice had the lyrical cadence of the court, although I was surprised to find a nobleman stooping to treasure hunting. I was in no position to judge, though. I'd take assistance where I could find it. I crawled on my hands and knees, putting the man between Luke and me. Anyone had to be better than Luke. My eyes fixed on the glowing lamp dancing behind his head. No, not a lamp. An orb that seemed to be floating through the air of its own accord. It swung around, hanging near my face, dazzling me with the brightness, but exuding only a little warmth.
How badly are you injured, Mademoiselle Trois?
I reached up to touch the light. then, thinking better of it, withdrew my hand. Only then did I realize he'd called me by name. I met his eyes, or I, rather. He stood peculiarly, and kept his face turned to one side, revealing only his profile. He was perhaps my brother's age, and particularly handsome. The light of the orb reflected in his silvery gray eye, as though the glow came from within. I'd never met anyone in my life with eyes like his. I'm afraid you have the advantage, monsieur, for while you know my name, I don't know yours. My heart beat faster. Something was dreadfully amiss. Apprehension made my hackles rise like a dog's as I eyed the man up and down. Who was he? And what was he doing beneath the rubble of Forsaken Mountain?
I should beg your pardon, mademoiselle, for failing to introduce myself. I am Marc de Brion, Comte de Courville.
His attention moved to Luc.
You were to bring her unharmed.
You're lucky she's still alive. We nearly got ate by that slua, Luc retorted.
You're lucky you didn't bring half a dozen of them down upon you the way you two carried on. I wouldn't be surprised if they could account your argument word for word in Trollis. You were so infernally loud.
No, I whispered. No, no, no. Every instinct said to run, but which way? I had no light, and the slua blocked the way we'd come from. But forward was where he'd come from, and he was. Rising to my feet, I cowered against the wall. You're a... he's a...
Aye, Cecile, Luc said, finally taking notice of my yammering. He's a troll, all right.
But you said they were monst... The troll abruptly turned and faced me straight on. The word died on my lips, replaced by a scream. Luc had been telling the truth. Chapter 4. Cecile. The two sides of his face, so flawless on their own, were like halves of a fractured sculpture put back together askew. The lack of symmetry was more than unsettling. It was shocking, gruesome even. One eye higher than the other, one ear lower than the other, a mouth marred by a permanently sardonic twist. I leapt back and into Luc, who clamped a filthy hand over my lips, silencing the scream.
Not a wise idea, he whispered in my ear before dropping his hand.
I'm sorry, I said, and repeated myself again because my mind didn't seem able to come up with any more words. I'm sorry. The silence stretched. When I raised my head, the light had retreated behind him, casting his face in shadows once more.
Come, he said. They are expecting you.
Abruptly, he turned, cloak flaring out as he strode down the tunnel. Then he hesitated, and to my dismay, extended his elbow.
Mademoiselle.
I didn't want to take his arm, because doing so meant agreeing to go with him. I stared back the way we came, towards the surface, where my father and our neighbors were frantically searching for me. But they'd never suspect where Luc had taken me. I'd have to rely on my own gumption to get free. But now was not the time. Not when they expected an escape attempt.
You have my word, mademoiselle. I will not harm you in any way.
Something about the way he said the words made me believe him. Taking a deep breath, I walked towards the troll and rested my hand on his arm. The brocade of his coat felt warm and rich beneath my cold fingers. There was strength, too. Caged like the tiger in the circus my father had once taken me to see. But that wasn't what sent a shiver down my spine. Like the prickle of a sand-filled wind, or the charge in the air during a thunderstorm, power washed over me. Though I never thought such a thing was possible, magic existed here with the force to lift a man and light the darkness. Perhaps my ready belief was naive, but I knew in my gut that the trolls possessed magic. My tongue ran over dry lips. For now, I would play along. Then we shouldn't keep them waiting. He escorted us through the maze of tunnels, always confident of which way to turn, though to my eyes nothing distinguished one tunnel from another. A labyrinth designed to lure a man in, but never allow him out again. Despite my best efforts, I shivered. The troll glanced down at me. Silently, he disengaged his arm from mine and unclasped his cloak, draping warmth on my shoulders. "Thank you," I said, wrapping the silken fabric around me. One silver eye met mine, his face tilted to restrict my view to his profile. I wondered if he always carried himself this way, or whether he had concealed his deformity for my benefit.
"It is nothing," he said. "I've been instructed to ensure you are well treated."
Behind us, Luke gave a soft snort. I ignored him and took the troll's arm again. The ground grew more even, rubbed smooth in a manner suggesting countless feet had trod this path over the years. Eventually, the bare rock gave way to paving tiles set in flowing mosaics of black, gray, and white. On the walls of the tunnel, a clear horizontal line delineated the break between mountain and a rubble of man-made or perhaps troll-made structures. The line rose as we walked, as though an invisible force held the fallen mountain up higher and higher the further we went. A city street, rising from the rubble. I reached out to trail my fingertips along the seemingly empty space and jerked back. It was warm. Tentatively, I raised my hand again and slid my fingers into the gap. Liquid heat enveloped my skin, tangible but somehow not. I tried to scoop some out, but the magic flowed through and around my hand, bound to its place. The break rose until it was beyond my reach. "The magic holds the mountain up," I murmured, examining the walls of stonework between which we now passed.
"It does," the troll agreed. "It is part of the tree."
"Tree?" Glancing up, I realized he had been watching me. The look in his eye was considering, appraising even. But it was the pity I saw there that revived my fear. Why was I here? What deal had Luke negotiated with the trolls, and what part did I play? We rounded a turn, and ahead metal gates barred our path. Beyond shone a silver glow that I knew better than to mistake for moonlight. A faint gust of air blew down the corridor, dampening my cheeks with mist, accompanied by the sound of falling water. Curiosity warred with fear. Dropping the troll's arm, I stepped through the gate and out on a ledge. The cavern was enormous, and what lay in the valley below drew me to my knees. The lost city of Trollus. "Stones and sky," I whispered.
"Just stones here," Luke commented from behind us. The troll's hand balled up into an angry fist, but Luke spoke the truth.
Darkness cloaked the cavern, and solid rock formed the ceiling. No stars shone through, no moon.
"This way, mademoiselle."
He took my arm and pulled me to my feet. The three of us started down a flight of granite steps, lit periodically with crystal lampposts glowing silver. The sides of the valley were terraced, the white stone buildings lining each level. Most impressive, though, was the waterfall cascading out of the blackness to form the churning river below. The roar of water echoed ceaselessly through the cavern. It was enough to drive one to madness, and I wondered how the trolls abided the constant din. Realization struck me. "That's the devil's cauldron."
"We call it
Heaven's Gates, the troll murmured, and I did not miss the irony in his voice. I had heard the legend of the cauldron. It was said